Hello, I'm Alice Arnold, and welcome to our mini summer season of the Magic Musicals and Theatre podcast. This week, our special guest is Martin Kemp. I'm with Martin Kemp backstage. We're in a tiny dressing room. This is not your dressing room.
This is no.
This is definitely not the star's dressing room.
No.
I don't want to do it down, but it's
But listen,
not.
You know, this is an old theatre. Some of these old theatres haven't been remodernised for a long time.
No.
But that's part of the charm.
Yeah. Have you got mice? Quite a lot of them have mice.
I couldn't tell you that.
Have you not seen a mouse?
I haven't seen
them. If you haven't seen them, then we're safe to get out the cakes, because we always start my interviews with cakes. Cupcakes. Not from my normal shop.
Oh, they look beautiful.
You can choose. Well, hang on. I'm going to put my microphone down for a second while we open the box.
Well, they look beautiful. I won't eat one yet while we're on air. Well, I'm trying to
My producer
to
certainly will. So,
right, well,
but maybe not
one.
While she's holding them out. Oh, it's a complicated box. I can't open it. There are two coconut and two.
Well, they look beautiful.
Chocolate. Anyway,
there you go. Thank you very much.
Right now, so Martin, you've just taken over.
Yeah.
In Chicago. Well, how's it? How's it been? How's it?
It's
started?
Been amazing. I mean, this is a show that has been banging on my door. For me to do for the past 10 years. Because 10 years ago it came to me and they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I kind of prepared for it in a way, and it just the timing was wrong and I couldn't get it together. So it's always been one of those that got away. So every time I walk past a theatre and it said Chicago above it in the West End, I always felt like, you know, one day I've got to do it. And then it came back to me, you know, a couple of months ago someone suggested that I should come along and do it again, and I thought perfect. You know, it's one that has been waiting there for a long time.
Yeah, it is about the right time and the right place and everything. You look incredibly fit and well.
You
look like someone who's been enjoying
much.
The heat wave.
Oh, no, I was on holiday for a bit and I was working, so so it all builds up. But I'm one of those people with tans come within seconds and then they take weeks for it to leave. So,
you've always been like that. Incredibly healthy.
And you can talk, you're tanned.
Yeah, a bit of that. It's because I don't work very much, Martin, that's why. I try to avoid it. But here we are.
Yeah.
Working now.
Yeah.
Working, interviewing you. But acting was, I mean, I know you're known, obviously, firstly, probably, for being a singer.
Well, it all depends. But it all depends what age group you are, I think. You know, I think a certain age group remember me in Spandau Ballet, and then you have a certain age group that remember me in EastEnders.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole bunch of guys out there that think the only thing I've ever done is the Cray to him film. So it all depends kind of what kind of line you sit on.
But I guess it started with the acting. As a child, it started with acting rather than music.
Yeah, I was lucky enough. I mean, when I grew up, I was a super shy kid, you know, painfully shy. So this drama club opened up across the road from my house in Islington. You've got to remember, Islington in those days is not the Islington mm-hmm. that it is today. You know, this is kind of post-war almost when we grew up. Gary and myself were playing on bomb sites still. And so there was very little there and very little chance to escape from where you were brought up. And Anna Scher opened up Drama Club across the road.
Famously changed so many people's lives,
so many,
that club, didn't
so
it?
So many. And it was right across the road from us, so my mum put me there. And it wasn't to turn me into an actor, it was to get rid of my shyness. Which it worked, and before I knew it, I'd done all those 1970s TV shows like Play for Today, Comedy Playhouse, all that sort of stuff. And it kind of got rid of the shyness, and it gave me a little bit of charisma at a certain young age that I think is good for most kids to have.
Mm-hmm. And well, your son has inherited that.
Well, he's doing all right at the moment. Yeah,
he is. I see he's advertised all over my telly screens all the time.
I know.
Yeah, it's great.
He's doing all right for himself.
Well,
you know, he was always a really articulate young kid. And he was always a bit of a show-off, and he had this incredible knack of impersonations. And so he used to walk into school in the mornings, every morning, and the teacher would get him up in the middle of the class doing impersonations of other teachers. So he was always the entertainer in the school. So I think he's in the right place for himself.
Yeah, well, he's making a huge success of it.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So you mentioned the film, the Grey film.
Yeah.
And then you went off to Hollywood for a bit.
Yeah, for a little bit. Yeah.
How did that go?
Well, because the Kray Twin film went down really well over there, you know, not box office wise, but credibility wise it did. So it opened lots of doors for me and Gary. And we spent about 3 years living out there in Hollywood, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I was working as an American doing TV and different film roles and stuff. And then my brother was stuck. My brother did really well. He got that movie, The Bodyguard, while he was out there as well. So he did really well. And but we were both enjoying it out there. And then the riots happened. And that was the thing that pushed us over the edge and we came home.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's why... Shirley...
It frightened the life out of everyone, and Shirley wasn't happy being out there then, and the tension was incredible there. So it was time for us to come back.
Because I would have thought anyway, the LA lifestyle would be so different from what you were used to in.
I loved it out there. You know, as long as you got
swimming pool, all that.
I mean, we had a good lifestyle out there, but. You know, you see, as long as you get your head around everybody networking you all the time and you don't worry about that, then it's fine, you know.
Okay.
If you worry about it, it'll drive you insane and you won't like it out there.
So then you came back for EastEnders, well, not for EastEnders, I guess, but EastEnders happened.
Well, no, not essentially. What happened was I was sent to Vancouver to do a TV show called The Outer Limits. That was that kind of remake of the 1960s TV show, sci-fi horror. And I was playing this old scientist that had invented a formula for everlasting life. And as I'm sitting in the makeup chair one morning, they're pulling on this ball cap on me because everything goes wrong and he starts to deteriorate at a much quicker rate. So it all goes wrong and they're dressing me up, pulling the ball cap on, and they see this huge lump on the back of my head, and it's a brain tumour that is growing underneath
my
skull.
So that happened because they were doing the makeup?
I kind of realised it was there in the previous couple of weeks. Shirley had felt it as well. And something was going on, but we weren't sure what it was. But then when they pulled the ball cap over my head, it was just so pronounced, you know, you could see it clearly. And it was actually the skull that was protecting itself. So it was kind of thick and it was kind of, the skull was growing out of shape. So that happened and they sent me home from there. And I ended up with a few years, 4 years, of being in the middle of this kind of hellscape that was happening around me. And it was EastEnders really that came straight after that pulled me out of that, out of that depression.
And one of the effects you said that had on you is that it made you dyslexic, and you weren't dyslexic
What happened with that was that you know, once they'd been inside my head and they were cutting it all around, they cut a few nerve endings that gave me this thing called spatial dyslexia, where if I wanted, which was terrifying really, you know, if I wanted to walk left, I would walk right and vice versa. So my brain was completely twisted for a while because they cut some of the nerve endings. And this is a happy chat, isn't it?
No, we'll move on to happier things. It's interesting though.
But what happened over the time, over the years, was that narrowed itself down to just me becoming dyslexic. And that's what it's left me with, which isn't really a bad price to pay for what I had.
And you see, you're talking about your health, and I'm looking at you, and to the radio listener, you look like the healthy, and you look so fit as
well.
Thank you very much. So
what
are we doing to keep ourselves in this sort of shape, apart from going on holiday?
I'm all or nothing. To be honest with you, the tan came from work. I was away somewhere working. But I'm all or nothing. If I don't work, then I'm in the gym every day.
Are you?
Because not because of looking after myself physically as much as looking after myself mentally, because I find it really kind of meditational, going to the gym, putting your headphones on, listening to music, having your own time for an hour, you know. And so I will do it all the time. But when I work, like now, in the show, then I doubt if I will go to the gym, you know. And maybe I'll pop in every now and again.
Yeah, I mean, well, the show, I guess, especially in this heat, it keeps you... It is quite physically exhausting, and you're doing your dance numbers. Yeah. How's the dancing? How
it's
are we
right,
with the
actually,
dancing?
It's moving, you mean.
Moving in time.
Everything is a test that you do, isn't it? I mean, this is not only the first time I've been in the West End. It's the first time I've been kind of dancing on stage, and it's the first time I've been singing on stage. I've done other musicals in the past, but without singing roles. But this is the first time, so it's a first time for a lot of things, which is why I'm really enjoying it, I think, because it's all a test, and I love that.
And how was the first night? How nervous were we?
They go past, first nights always go past so quick, you know, because you have so much nervous energy. And there isn't as much rehearsal time as you ever want, you know. You could always do with that extra week, but that's never going to happen. So you know you go out there and you do your best, but we're a week in now, so the show's running up and running,
so we're settling in, and obviously the cast, they'd all been doing it for 3 months, so you weren't sliding into a position that Cuba Gooding Jr. left empty for you.
That's right.
Are you doing it differently? Did you see him do it?
I saw Cuba do it, Cuba did it really differently. He played it kind of comedic. Really, he had a comedy edge to it, which I haven't seen anyone do, play Billy Flynn like that before. And I really enjoyed it. But, you know, I'm playing it a little bit more traditional, as it were, you know, Billy Flynn, the character. I like him, you know, he's full of himself, he's conceited, he's like, for me, you know who he is, he's the devil. And he's getting these girls to sell their souls for $5,000, and that's who he is. And that's why I love playing him. Yeah.
And what about the discipline of the 8 shows a week? And I mean, as you say, you've been in shows before.
Yeah, I've done them before.
But you're fronting this. It
doesn't matter when you're in a show. It doesn't matter if you're fronting it or if you're one of the chorus. You know, it doesn't matter. The discipline has to be the same. And I'm a big one for preparation. You know, I always have been. Before I walk on to, I think maybe it's because I'm dyslexic as well, is that before I even go to a rehearsal, I will know every word and every comma and everything that you could ever learn. You know, you understand what I'm saying because you're in the same business as me. Yeah. You know, you cannot wing it anywhere along the line in entertainment. If you do, you get found out.
Yeah.
So I'm a big one for preparation, and I love it. I love the test. I love the opportunity, and I'm really enjoying myself getting up and singing as well.
But also, I think that the prep, especially with the shorter rehearsal period, allows you then to perform. Because if you're worrying about the fact you haven't learnt your lines, that's what I always say when people say, "Oh, it's amazing they learnt." So that's the first thing. Yeah. Get that out of the way, because you can't perform and relax and enjoy a performance.
It's a lesson
if you're thinking about what comes next.
Yeah, it's a lesson for anybody, no matter what level you are of actor or entertainment. The minute you walk onto a rehearsal stage, that is not a space to learn lines. Learning lines is done at home before you walk onto that rehearsal space. Rehearsals is about acting and how you're going to do it.
But you see, you can cut this bit out, but when I worked with some Americans, they said they couldn't learn their lines until they had all the motivation and everything for it.
So I was going,
that doesn't help me because I'm now acting with someone with a book and...
There's this thing, isn't there, where your lines are either in your head or in your heart, and you have to wait for them to sink down.
Absolutely.
You have to wait for them to become muscle memory.
And then you can play with them, which presumably after doing a week now, you're settled in, you know, the blocking, everyone knows where you are and you know where everyone else is.
Yeah, well,
you can start to play around more with the part and expand it.
And what you find is that... it's not in reality, but in your head you have more time. So when you're on stage, you have more time in between your lines to be thinking about, oh, what if I do this? What if I try that? And so it becomes fun.
Mm. Actually, I think sometimes literally you have more time as well when you're doing like quick changes and things, which you think are quick. And then after a while, it's like, actually, I've got time to go back, have a cup of tea do the change costume. But exactly on the first night. It's really, really quick. It's really quick.
Banging on the first night.
Billy Flynn, as we talked about, is a ladies' man.
Yeah.
But you're not, are you? You've been, well, I mean, you've been ladies' man, but you've been very happily married.
Oh, well, Shirley and I coming up to being married for 30 years this year. Yeah.
Which is lovely.
Well, it's lovely, but people say, "Oh, well done, congratulations." I don't see it like that at all. You know, I see it like it's no big deal. This is what's happened to us, and it's really nice and it's lovely. But I wouldn't say it's any kind of achievement. It's just that it's Shirley and I are really, really happy with each other. We love each other, and why shouldn't we?
So this musical theatre route. Mm. Do you know how long you're doing this?
I'm here until the first week of September.
Right. Okay. And then, would you do more?
I love it. Yeah. Well, I did a $1 million quartet last year. You know.
Yeah.
I did that for about 9 or 10 weeks, I think, all in all. We played the Royal Festival Hall, and that was great. You know. And what else did I? I've done a bit of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang over the past few years, and I enjoy musical theatre, but it's not something I didn't see myself doing it, to be honest. Mm. You know, I never thought I would, but I'm here now and I'm really enjoying it. And so, you know, for me, the nicest thing about being in entertainment is that, and it's a pleasure, that bubble that we work in. Called entertainment, and the nicest thing about that is you never know what's coming through on your email next, and it could send you somewhere completely different that you never even thought of.
And doing this, as you say, testing yourself because you like that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what's the next one? Because people know that you're up for. Well, you did that. Maybe you'll. Have you ever? Is there a part, a particular part that you've ever really wanted to play that you haven't done yet?
Yeah,
there's
a couple.
Something?
There's a couple. You know.
Come on, then, because say it on here, and
there's
never
know people. There's a couple. I'd like to play. I'd like to do the Frankenfurter role. You know, Rocky Horror.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to do that. That'd be a lot of fun. And I would like to do the Brando role in Streetcar Named Desire. And they're two bits that I would always like to do. I'm not sure if I could do the Brando role now. I'm a bit old for that one now.
Right.
I must probably get the other fillers.
Anyway, put it out there now. So, anyone who's listening?
I mean, but it is what I said. You know, the nicest thing is you don't know what's coming through next. And I'm lucky enough to have lots of strings to my bow, you know, whether it's acting or presenting or the band or whatever it is. And, things are exciting.
We'll talk about the band briefly because Mellow Magic, we like to play you
a
lot.
Yeah, of course. I know, yeah, I hear it all the time.
So, you might not be able to answer. Do you have one favourite track?
Oh, yeah, of course. Through the Barricades is my favourite track. Yeah, because it's. It means so much to everybody. You know, that track, when it was written, it was obviously about, you know, the troubles in Ireland and love across the divide. And then when we took it out on tour, I remember you realised that anybody who has, a struggle bringing their love together, it was their song, you know, especially when we played in San Francisco for the first time and all the gay couples that were in the audience. And it was their song for that reason, you know. And then when the band got back together in 2009, right? And we took it out on tour for the first time. And I hadn't seen the other boys for about 15, 16 years, you know, because we fell out. And that became our song. Because it was Across the Barricade.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I think that song will always be my favourite Spandau song.
Yeah. We've got 2.5 more months for people to get here and see you playing Billy Flynn.
Yeah,
And God, you look absolutely how I imagine the perfect Billy Flynn to look.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, that's what I said. They only chose me. They only asked me to do it because the colour of my hair.
Yeah,
because it looks like Richard Gere.
Yes, it does. You do look like the perfect. You look like the perfect Billy Flynn.
All right, fantastic.
Thank
nice talking to you.
Thank you so much.
That was the Musicals and Theatre podcast. And if you enjoyed that, then why not subscribe? It's absolutely free to our channel on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear me every weekend morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic.